Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast. Today is October 11. It's full on Libra season, the time of the year that Nye hates.
Wait.
Remember last time I said Libra season, you was like, y'all are so rare.
Because y'all are. That doesn't mean I hate Libra.
Okay.
Speaking of Libra season, happy birthday.
I know, like, way too many of y'all's parents was fucking in the early year. That's all I'm saying.
It was around Valentine's Day.
Entirely too many of y'all niggas. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, man.
It's too many of y'all. Okay. And y'all start, like, day... I'm an Aries. We're the most extra motherfucker. We're the first sign of the zodiac, and we don't go as hard for Aries season as y'all go for Libra season. Like, day one, y'all like, it's Libra season, what's up? Y'all be like, man, it's like it's Christmas and shit.
Y'all are annoyed,
whatever. happy belated birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I turned 32.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, you know, people sing happy birthday, and they'd be like, are you one? Are you two? And Jeff would be like, are you 50? Are you 70? Are you 30?
Are you 83? Are you 97?
Pop Life Podcast resident octogenarian.
Whatever.
Got I remember back in 53 with me and Tyrone. Now the field's picking that cotton.
Your stories don't really be that far from that, though. I'm just saying.
I feel like I'm one of them people that, like, you know, when you look at old pictures, like the 1875, you'd be like,
ain't that Jeffrey? Yes. Correct.
Yeah. It was cool. It was good. I went to this restaurant downtown called Cadence, which is a black-owned vegan restaurant. Really nice. The chef's name is Shanari. Her tag is Shanari Greens. I can't remember her last name, but she's pretty famous vegan chef. She's originally from Richmond, Virginia. It's like kind of it's a small spot, but it's dope. It's kind of like her being from the South, she made it. It's like a diner style almost. Like it's a counter. There's no tables. Uh-huh. It's just a counter.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So it's about maybe 20 seats, so it's hard to get a reservation and all that.
I was gonna say, it's exclusive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does
the pricing reflect that?
No, the pricing wasn't crazy. You know, I mean, it's okay. You know, it's New York City, but it wasn't like, you know, $50 an entree, $80 an entree. It wasn't that. But
because usually when it's that small with that few seats, you're looking at some numbers.
Yeah, because of the overhead and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's her restaurant. I found out that her restaurant, and there's several of the restaurants under this kind of umbrella company, and they're all in a row. Do you know where Mr. Lily's is on 7th Street? The one on 7th Street. It's in that row.
Okay.
It's like about five doors down from that. So it's kind of like this little strip of rest. I don't think Miss Lily's is in. I don't know if they're included in that company or not, but they're all like in a row and whatnot. A lot of them are vegan, and the food was great because they make, you know, fresh to order. So if you cook whatever you order, they're making it right there. You know, so it was Shanari, and she had a sous chef, and they just getting it in and they getting it popping. And they only sell liquor wise beer and wine, but they carry Dwayne Wade as a wine. He has like a rosé. So I tried his shit too. So I was that was good. So it was good. It was good. It was a good night. Then went uptown to bar wine, had some what's it called? Nightcap. And then Julian took me out Saturday to Cantina in Harlem. We kicked it there, and then that was it. And then I went home and watched the fight. So I had a good 32nd birthday weekend.
Dope. That sounds like a good weekend. I'm glad
it was cool.
I'm glad you didn't go out uptown, though. I was worried about you.
Yeah, I thought about it, and I was, honestly, I started getting, you know, I had to say, I've been out Friday night, I've been out all day Saturday, so and I went to the gym, so I was kind of like a little tired anyway. And then once the fight came on, and it was kind of chilly Saturday night, I'm chilling, man. The fight was great, you know what I'm saying? We'll talk about that in a second. The fight was fucking awesome, so I was good. I had a good night. And Love and Marriage Huntsville was great that night.
Bruh.
Dude!
Speaking of being in public, I'm just getting over bronchitis, and it's truly a federal offense to cough in public.
Now, oh yeah,
I just want y'all. Oh yeah, I'm COVID free, but the looks I got was like,
oh yeah,
stabbing people I believe every time I cough.
Somebody coughed in the theater last night.
Uh-oh.
It was a smooth, like, five rows away from me, and I was still trying to identify him. Like, where's that? Because that shit was rough and tumble, nigga. There was something in that cough.
Yeah,
was
like, you all right?
That's meaty.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to go to the bathroom and spit that out.
Yeah, clean all that shit out. That shit coming up out of here.
And that's what my cough sounds like, so...
Well, I told you I was on a plane going somewhere. I forget where I was going. Just probably Atlanta. And I was caught. I had some type of cough earlier this year. I went away, so I don't know what it was, but it was for like a stretch, maybe like 2-3 weeks. I was coughing a lot. And I was on a plane, and the woman next to me was like looking at me like, nigga, you're about to kill us all on this plane. She was a black woman too. She's like, oh my God, rolling her eyes at me and all kind of stink ass shit. So, fuck you, lady. Anyway, hey Ivy. So how y'all doing, by the way? How's everybody doing?
Good. I know we'll get into a TV segment eventually, but this relates to how I'm doing. I ended up staying up most of the night to watch this joint on Netflix called Made, which I just called.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna tap into that. It's on my list. Based on the book.
Yeah, based on the book, which is a autobiography or memoir, autobiography, whatever, like Confessions of a Maid or something. And I don't know how much of this is accurate, but it's, and I don't know if she framed it this way, but because I had never heard of the book before the series, but it's about a woman who is trying to leave a DV relationship. And the reason, and Washington Heights says hello. It never fails. I don't hear a siren until I get on a Zoom call.
Come on this joint.
Amazing. And the reason that it's called Maid is because initially when she's trying to get, when you're trying to get even emergency housing, you can have it for a little while, but after that, you have to be able to prove you're working in order to get any kind of public assistance. Mm-hmm. People don't really understand that. Like, they think you just have to show proof of work. That's great if you already have someplace to live. But when you're trying to get someplace to live, and when you're trying to get a childcare voucher, and when you're trying to get all those things, they need like employer signatures. And the only job she can get is initially as like a maid, which leads to all this other stuff. But it's frustrating as a watcher, right? And I'm not even a DV survivor. But like, it just shows you how complex the system is, and it's even a thing where the first episode was like the most stressful. Almost was like, I don't know if I could do this whole series, and it varies episode to episode. But like, she has a certain amount of money, so everything she does is like a tally goes up on the screen to show you like what is looking like in terms of like, it's almost like a game in terms of like the money that she has. And you just see how easily all that shit just falls apart, And I just think it's essential for those of us who have always been able to have housing and have, our needs met, even if not the way we want to watch, especially people who are always like, why don't you just leave? Like that type of thing.
Because it ain't
that simple. It's not that simple
Nobody has, most people don't have like, a smooth 1,500 racks or sitting somewhere.
Exactly.
Also, like,
he didn't have a job.
If you're in a DV relationship, him hitting you is not the first offense. Like, usually you're isolated by that point.
Yeah.
You are financially dependent on him.
And that was the thing. He had kids.
You know what I mean?
He had not hit her yet. And she left with him throwing stuff and punching holes in the walls. So then she's also like, so then she's looking crazy because she's like, I've never filed a police report against him. I've never done this. But like, y'all should watch it. It's I think it's necessary. There's also, I'll look for the name of it while I'm on here. I just saw last week there is a domestic shelter or a domestic organization, I think in North Carolina, that they actually have an online game where you are a single parent and you're going on public assistance, and you actually have to make choices like, okay, you can live closer to work, but your rent is this much more money, and your transportation is this much less money. Now your car breaks down, you know, you hit a car, do you leave the scene or do you stay? You know, like, is that kind of stuff? Yeah. And it just, again, it's just, if we're frustrating watching it or going through a simulator version of it, imagine going through that shit.
Somebody in it.
Yeah. So I just wanted to shout that program out, because I was just like, it's,
yeah, that's like the next one of the next things on my it's on my account, you know, that list on Netflix, your list, it's on my list. So I'm definitely gonna watch that real soon. I mean, we already mentioned Squid Game on here, but it's just kind of getting bigger. You know what I'm saying? I saw a thing yesterday where, you know, those white. Everybody here, y'all all seen it?
No, but I'm okay.
I have.
All right, cool. Well, okay. Well, this is not a spoiler.
This is not. It don't matter to me, nigga. You can watch the entire plot. I am good.
Well, in the show, when they put on their uniforms, they wear white bands, slip on white bands, all white. I saw a thing yesterday where. The
sales are they Vans though? Because I've seen slip-on white shoes like that in the Kmart's and the Walmart. And
yeah, but
like,
those ones are particular Vans.
Vans.
Yeah, but there are different. People make those because they're just white.
They're just white shoes,
But they said that the Vans, the all-white Vans that they're wearing in the Squid Game, sales have gone up 8,000% since that show came on. And that's like
8,000.
8,000%. And again,
also, a really easy Halloween costume.
It is.
Oh, everybody going to be that this year.
Oh, 100%.
Everybody's going to either wear the pink or wear the green sweatsuit with the white Vans. Everybody.
There's also, there's a girl who's a streamer, and she has the Instagram and Twitch name. She's a gamer. She streams like games for a living. Mm-hmm. And she had the Instagram handle and the Twitch handle Squid Game. And her Instagram handle, she's had it for years, got taken. And she doesn't know, or got reported so much that Instagram shut it down. She has it back now, but she says she doesn't know if it was fans mass reporting it, thinking that she was trying to pretend to be an official Squid Game account, or if, you know, it was actually Netflix trying to report.
Probably.
Netflix apparently didn't respond.
Probably a combination of the both.
Actually. Yeah, but she said she was getting mad DMs of people mad that it wasn't like a fan account or the official account. Like, they were really harassing her. Like, how dare you keep this account? You need to let it go. Like, the nerve of you to have it. She's like, I had this shit for years. What are you talking about? You know, people are a little obsessed.
She's a phenomenon, man.
And shout out to black people who call it Squid Games, as of course.
I do. I knew we was going to put an S on it.
That's what we do.
The Squid Games. We're going to put a D on the front and an S on the back.
It's the Squid Games. It's more than one game in the movie. Yeah. We're going to call it the Squid Games.
You definitely just said Kmart, too.
I did that on purpose. That was intentional.
But yeah, it's just interesting to watch this thing get bigger and bigger. The stars have been on, like, you know, Jimmy Fallon and some of the shows here in the U.S. now. I don't know her name, but the girl she's like a model. She's like on cover of Vogue now, I think, and maybe, I don't know if it's in the U.S., but she's on a Vogue cover. Like, the thing is just steamrolling. And I read a thing where, I actually posted it where
she was a model first, though.
Yeah, but now
already a model in the U.S. Yeah,
but now shit is like super exploding now. Like, she was working and making money, you said, but now it's just like a whole different level. And I was reading, I posted something where the guy who wrote it, he wrote this in 2009. And he literally got turned down by everyone. Like, everybody was like,
yeah, he couldn't sell it. But originally he did it as a movie.
Yeah, not a series.
And then he expanded it to a series, which I think probably made a difference, because that as a movie would not have been nearly as compelling.
No. And he added a couple of characters and stuff, like the cop wasn't in the original.
Right.
And stuff like that. He had a couple of characters. But he said he got down to where he had to sell his laptop because he had no money.
Wow.
And, he was fucked up like 10 years ago. He had it got picked up in 19 and it's obviously out now. So yeah, he was fucked up. And so he was just like, yo, I stuck to my guns. I mean, you know, we hear these
stories all the time.
J.K. Rowling, like, she was.
Yeah, she wrote a show on napkins.
Yeah, exactly. People wasn't fucking with Harry Potter initially. They was like, what is this shit? And obviously you see, so stick to your guns. If you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
But I also think there's a lesson there. I mean, this wasn't the case with JK. I think her shit went relatively quickly once she found, you know, a publisher and everything. But with but him.
The thing also about JK, didn't she start writing like late in life though?
Yeah, she was divorced.
And yeah, she's like a regular like mom and shit. And
yeah, but with him, I think the fact that he realized that he needed to tweak it creatively, to make it what it was, is also
Well, I just want to add two quick things. One, it's very important. A very important takeaway from that story is that he was open to tweaking the creative.
Right.
And so sticking to your guns is like. It's a metaphor that plays here, but there's also people who stick to their guns to the detriment of Project Long.
Yes.
And I think that, and we've kind of seen this even in music. It's like, you're stuck on this one producer and he ain't bringing it right now.
Yeah.
And so we've seen that happen. But yeah, I also think that this is a testament of going back into your creative wheelhouse and reworking some of the projects. Oftentimes, people are passing on projects because the time is not necessarily right and the executives are not necessarily right. It doesn't mean that projects are bad. And sometimes you may just get passed on because the building isn't behind this. Again, we know this from being in music, right? Like if the building is not behind a project, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, Alicia Keys was on Columbia at first. Right. Got dropped out with the Clive, and we know what happened next. And there's 100 stories like that.
Yeah, 50, Destiny's Child, Neo. Absolutely.
It is great to stick to your guns. It's also great to be have a little wiggle room with your creativity.
Yeah.
To move it along without, suffering the biggest, taking away the bigger things of your content.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention Squid Game, the Squid Games, because it's just this phenomenon now. So it's just incredible. Wanted to also mention Saints of Newark.
The Mini Saints of Newark.
Yeah, the Mini Saints of Newark, which is the prequel. I don't know if it's got or not, bro. Is it going to be more than one prequel?
It was not presented as such. It was presented as a prequel movie
to the
Sopranos. It was supposed to give you insight. What it was billed as was, this is what makes Tony Tony.
Yeah, it's Tony's origin story.
It's Tony's origin story, and that's not what we got.
Yeah, but it ain't Tony's origin story. The story's about Christopher's dad.
Yeah,
Tony is in the movie.
Ultimately, the goal was to show how Dickie Moltisanti, who was Christopher's dad, who the movie is really centered around, influenced Tony to become the kind of person that he was. Yeah. There was a lot of missing stuff. And ultimately what happens in a movie like this is like, we're all coming to see the characters that either we love or we hate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We don't have a relationship as a viewer to Dickie Moltisanti. The only relationship we have is that he's Christopher's dad. Yep. He was an old gangster. That was it.
Yep.
He was not a big part of the series, so it just kind of really left this weird taste. The movie also dives into, and I'm a tread lightly here because, and this is my opinion, the movie. They tried to be all things to all people, and I felt like the angle of the Leslie Odom character, which I think his name's Harold in the movie. So Harold is basically, he knows Dickie Moltisanti, and he's ultimately just kind of a numbers runner for the Italian bank for the numbers racket in Newark. He's basically a numbers runner. And I mean, we all kind of, anyone who's ever grown up in a big city, Baltimore, New York, we all know what that story is. That's not an unfamiliar story. But it was a very weird relationship, and it seemed very open, right? Like, I don't necessarily know that a black man is just walking up into the fucking butcher shop with the Italians to have a casual conversation.
In the 60s?
In the 60s. That nigga, I was like, maybe the 90s? Maybe.
Maybe.
Even
maybe.
Him just driving down that street was a lot more dangerous than they portrayed it on screen.
It was very, and so it felt like an attempt to sort of acknowledge or tie in sort of modern current social issues, which look, I applaud, but it was a little heavy-handed, and that's not really what I was coming for. And in fact, I thought that Leslie Odom Jr. played an incredible role. I thought he was really, really good.
Yeah, he was dope.
Particularly, like, good and not singing, right? Like, we're always seeing him as a singer, right? Like, so it was good to see that. And I actually felt like, yo, this actually would have been a great standalone movie.
Exactly. It's not Frank Lucas in there and some other shit. It would have been very interesting.
Yes, and that was on par with the times. Yes, in 1970, early 70s, mm-hmm. Frank Lucas, Nicky Barnes, those guys would have been coming out of your mouth, you mm-hmm. know, during that period.
Absolutely.
So, but you know, we go back to the movie, and so you start to see things like. You see Paulie and you see Big Pussy and
Silvio.
The Silvio and the age is really the time frame kind of warped me a little bit because I never saw them as that much older than Tony.
That threw me off too. I was like, oh, these dudes are like these guys are like could be Tony's father. These guys are like way older.
Yeah, they seem to be very, very much like older. And you know, the Ray Liotta character. The characters because he plays basically two people.
Very weird,
but God bless, right? Like, you know, and I just thought that the movie was you know, was it the worst thing ever? No. What was it?
No.
Definitely not voluntarily.
Yeah.
I think the reason it doesn't work as... Not to cut you off. I'm sorry, Colin. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
The reasons it doesn't work as a prequel for me is that you had to have extensive knowledge of the Sopranos series to even make sense of what was happening. Mm. And also, a lot of... This is supposed to be what makes Tony, but there's a lot of the movie that Tony isn't even present for.
Yep.
And doesn't even know what's going on. Like the whole where like Dickie, the stuff that happened with his father. So he rolls up when the garage is already closed. So like there's no way that he knows that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For him to come out and be this gangster and like the leader of the family at the end, I don't see how we got.
Yeah, I didn't see that. That's why I was asking back at the beginning, and I kept thinking they must be planning to make it another one of these because this doesn't make Tony's path clear to where he got to in The Sopranos at all. Like I was like, he was. I don't want to say a nice kid. He was like this tough, kind of a tough, you know, kid from Jersey, but like he was also very smart. You know, like he played football. Like, I'm just like, how did he get from that to that? And which meant that he had to go through people and skip over some people as well, like who were older than
him. Yeah, especially like, at the end when the family was really trying to not let him be in the life at all. Like, how did he? I'd rather see how he got over that hump after Dickie died.
Exactly. My two favorite characters, which were kind of like minor characters in the movie, which were, I liked what they did. It gave us a lot of insight about Tony's mom.
Yes.
Like, so she was actually bipolar, but it wasn't diagnosed as that. It was just, oh, just crazy.
Carmela Soprano being bipolar makes all the sense in the world.
No, not Carmela, Tony's mom.
Tony's mom.
That's what I meant. What's her name?
Olivia,
her. Yeah, that's what I meant.
She was bonkers then, but it was just like, oh, she's just crazy. But you kind of see, like, yes, she is off, but. She's off, and then they dropped a jewel in there, which was like, she was really smart, but she was depressed. It got suppressed on her as a child, which kind of made her act out in different ways. That's what Tony got his intelligence from his mom. She was actually very smart in school and stuff. And then the other character I loved was the woman who came over from Italy.
Oh yeah, Chris's mom. Is that Chris's mom?
No, that wasn't Chris's mom, but that was the woman, Dickie Dumar. But I just thought she was, because she was very liberated. You know what I'm saying? Like, she wasn't the docile kind of lady from Italy. She was like, nah, fuck that. I want a business. And I'm blah, blah, blah. You think I'm stupid. And like, she was on it. Like, she was on point with her shit, you know? And even when she told, I mean, spoiler alert, but even when she told him about Harold, like, she was honest. She was like, yeah, you ain't been around. So yeah. You know, I fucked your boy. Like, what you want me to know? Like, it was. I found that character. That character fascinating. She was the most fascinating character to me in the film.
I loved Uncle Junior in the film.
Oh yeah, and now we found out like, walked through the cane and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah.
So the acting was great. The plot was great. What the hell is this?
Bonkers. Yeah, I agree. So I'm with Sean. Like, it was. I watched it. I ain't mad. I watched it, but I'm not gonna watch it again. You know.
I'll watch it again.
Okay, cool. I wanted to. Okay, so the BET Hip Hop Awards came on. Did any of y'all watch that?
Absolutely not.
Didn't know what was happening.
I watched it. Something else. I think football was on that. Something else was on. So I was kind of going back and forth. But I saw enough of it. They're not getting early on the BET. Okay, the BET Hip Hop Awards came about because the BET Awards, especially in during this that era, was very kind of R&B. It was very political, and they got like massive star power back then. Like, you get like, you know, Maxine Waters and Whitney Houston and Beyonce and like, you know, the top of the top.
Wait, so what you talking about?
I'm talking about on the BET Awards back then.
Oh, when they first started.
Yes, so when Steven was producing, so you get Michael Jackson and James Brown and Prince. You
on the main BET Awards, though, not the Hip Hop Awards.
No, the BET Awards.
Okay.
So what I'm saying, so if you were able to crack the BET Awards as a hip hop artist, you had to be like really big, like Jay-Z, you know, like that level of artist during that era. Nelly, 50 Cent, that type of thing. So there was a whole kind of tear down of artists that were doing well and performing well and making money and so on that weren't going to crack that show because that show was so jam-packed with, you know, because that show used to be like, could be political.
They still try to be all things to all people.
Steven was able to do that well. So then they used to do the 106 in Park outside pre-show, and that was cool. They'd have like Soulja Boy and blah, 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 but it wasn't like hardcore rap. So then they decided to do the BET Hip Hop Awards. And early,
I also thought the Hip Hop Awards were meant to serve the space that was left after there was no more Source Awards and no more Ozone Awards and no more, because we used to have
exactly. And then at that point, the BET Hip Hop Awards, I really enjoyed it because they used to get like real star power on that show in the rap world. You get like Cash Money and Master P and, you know.
Yeah, I remember Ross doing it.
Yeah, everybody. All the big ones have done it at some point. But now that's really dissipated. And now it's like they're not getting the star power that they used to get. I mean, you know, they got some of the younger acts, which is cool. Like, I liked Lotto's performance, and the little girl Bia did her thing, and, you know, a couple other people. The Cyphers, that's the other thing. Back then, the Cyphers were like, nigga,
The Cyphers were major.
It was like Eminem and, you know, like the best of the best doing the Cyphers, you know, Meek and da da da. And now it's kind of, you know, it's the newer people, which is fine because they get a shot, but it's just not the star power is not what it was. And then I don't know if they're going to get, because the BET Awards opened up to the hot, big rappers. So that's where they go.
Right.
And so now you know, I don't know. So I didn't enjoy it like I used to, but I mean, I watched it anyway, just, you know, because for the culture.
While we're speaking of hip hop awards, I just want to put out into the universe that I would like to see another rebirth of and continuation of the Hip Hop Honors. I really enjoy that show.
Yep, I agree.
We need something for the old hip hop people too. And that's the thing where we are with hip hop now. I think that we still haven't, as a culture or a music industry, yet embraced the fact that hip hop is a 45 plus year old genre.
Yeah.
And it needs, like, the same way like, we acknowledge that there's classic hip hop, but we don't make space for it the way there's space made for like classic rock or, you know, that kind of legacy stuff. And I mean, we're beyond the point where we need to say we don't treat, like I said this on Twitter, we're beyond the point of saying that we don't treat our legacy artists the same way, because I think we finally are. We finally are acknowledging the stories and the history and, you know, all that. But in terms of the marketplace, we still lump it all together. And
you can't. You can't now because it's too vast. You can't put Soulja Boy. You can't put Soulja Boy, Lotto, and Big Daddy Kane together because it doesn't make sense.
You can't.
They're all rap, but it's very, very different.
It's a broad. I mean, you know, the original hip hop generation is in our 60s now. Like it's just like you can't. So. Yeah. Literally, they're a senior citizen to like pop lock and fucking boxing. Yeah. You know, so it's not a young person's game anymore. But also, the style of music now that hip hop is pop, or rap is pop. People will argue it's not hip hop that's pop, it's rap. If you're a hip hop purist, but the fact that it's pop now, because it's the biggest genre in the world, that alone means that you need to make more space for it. You need to carve out more lanes. The Grammys needs another category for it, the same way we have classic R&B and we have classic, you know, classical pop performance, whatever. Like, and in terms of even our award shows, that's why, you know, Soul Train is my shit. The Soul Train Awards is my home. Like, that's where I'm going. I'm good over there. I know I'm going to have a good time over there. And that's Auntie Uncle Central, and that's where I am, and that's where I'm happy. But that's what I love about the hip-hop honors. Like, it. Those are the people that I want to see. I don't care about the littles and the
powers too.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I agree with that. But, I mean, I don't want to go off on a tangent, but, like, the issue has always been a lot of the older hip-hop people don't reach backwards.
Yeah.
They shun the younger ones. So then the younger ones say, fuck you, and now we have this crazy schism where the older heads is like, man, that ain't no real hip-hop shit. Nah. And the younger ones are like, man, fuck y'all. Y'all didn't help us, so why should I help reach up back to you? So it's messy.
Hip-hop as a genre is... Hip-hop as a genre is just so young. So this is our first iteration of it being like second, third generation. Whereas like if you look at country music, the same shit happens with them. Like, you know, Reba McEntire is probably not jiving with Miranda Lambert or whoever is new and hot right now. Like, they don't get the...
But on those shows...
The old heads don't exactly...
Loretta Lynn singing with Carrie Underwood.
No, I get it.
We don't even get that.
The old heads don't really rock and, you know, welcome in a Taylor Swift or whatever. Like, she's going to get backlash from the community as a whole because it's something different, fresh, and young. And I think that's what's happening in hip-hop. Like, you have your purists who are like, you know, your old head country music. Like, this is just the first time we've seen.
I understand what you're saying. I think the difference... let me say one thing quick, Sean, before I go off point. I'm sorry. The differences with country music and other genres, and this is just the way it's kind of set up, is that young or old, you got to cut through Nashville. You have to. There's no way around it. You're going to go to Nashville if you're in the country music.
Grand Ole Opry, got to happen.
Yeah, the Grand Ole Opry, something. You cannot be a country music star without going through Nashville. And hip-hop doesn't have like a centralized city where everybody kind of gathers, you know. But I'm sorry. But go on, Sean. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Nah, it's fine. I was just going to say old niggas in hip-hop been angry for a long time. Since the early days, okay? That first generation, those originators, they were not happy when, you know, that Kane and that golden era in them came around. Yeah,
and they started making money.
They played nice, but that's really what changed. This ain't even about styles. This ain't even about anything other than lifestyle. That first generation, they reaped no benefit, like zero benefit. They were still living at home, like literally still living in the same apartment they were when they started this shit. And yeah, they were sour and they were sore. You know what I'm saying? And to watch dudes pull up with their truck jewelry and their Volvos in fucking 87 had them niggas tight. And had them tight when Puffy was buying mansions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
niggas was on jets talking about San Tropez.
Yeah, but I mean, because people, obviously, this is a long time ago, so, like, this generation doesn't know this, but, like, yo, when Run DMC first came out, like, Flash and them niggas hated them niggas. Nice. They hated them, first of all, because like Sean said, they was getting it. Number two, they hated them because they were from Queens. And they were like, what the fuck is Queens? This is only supposed
who cares
to be
about Queens?
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't fuck with LL when he first came out either for the same reasons. So, you know, again, this has been many years and it's kind of morphed into something else. But like that whole, you know, we mad at the younger generation has been going on since the beginning. I wanted to mention, I guess I'll give a shot. Bro, are you there or did he get popped off? I'll hold it till he comes back because this one will be for him. Oh, there you go. Bro, I wanted to give you a chance to shout out your man, Steve Harvey, with them fits over in Paris and how he killing the gram.
Nah, Steve.
So, no, he is. No, I'm not making a joke.
Lavender was special.
He's killing the gram for real.
Steve been so... We all know, there's a line of demarcation between how Steve dressed pre-Marjorie and post-Marjorie.
Nigga, that line is huge.
and so it's very clear.
That line is the Grand Canyon. Like, it's a mess.
So there are a couple things that happens. First of all, Steve's an old nigga. Like, Steve is 65.
Yeah.
Easy. And I think actually might shade older than that, but I know
he's 65.
Okay.
From Cleveland by way of West Virginia, my nigga. You can't be And so he's daring. He wears a lot of colors and like he's not afraid. And here's the thing about Steve now. He ain't afraid to miss. He'll wear some shit that's kind of off the cuff or maybe not all the way curling over, but he always owns that shit. Like, he's super, super comfortable in his fits. And, you know, I mean, I like to see, you know, listen, man, that's what he does. Like, this nigga probably has, he probably goes through 300 suits a year. That's no bullshit.
More than that, because remember, he's wearing multiple suits just on his show. Then he wearing multiple suits on Family Feud.
That's like what I'm saying. Yeah, so probably like about three. I'm saying he's probably going through, you know, hundreds of suits a year.
Absolutely.
You know, thing. And so, you know, black and brown becomes a little boring.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So shout out to him for, you know what I'm saying, being out there really stepping into that shit. And he really be owning that shit, man. And he'll wear something that's just not totally, completely old, nigga. And it should be fitting right now.
Yeah, it fits is right.
He takes it on the chin. I mean, listen, man, it's a running joke. It's like, what's the word? What's that word where something becomes what we refer to a thing? Like, we say Xerox, but what we really mean is
photocopy. Yeah.
That's
like, what the Steve Harvey suit
is. That's what the Steve Harvey suit is. When you say Steve Harvey suit, you're saying 7-button, single breast, wide leg.
Big ass pleats.
Yeah. That's
we don't know.
A 6-inch cuff. Yeah, but I appreciate, you know, and Marjorie is a you know, fashion, very heavy into fashion. She goes over to Paris every year and buys couture right off the runway. Like she's really about that life, you know, for real. Like she's known at the Louis and the Dior's and the whatever, like in the ones in Paris, like not just the one in the mall, like the original shit.
Right. She gets the invites to the shows.
She gets the invites and all of that. She's getting fitted and all. She's really about that life. So she's brought him into it. And, I definitely enjoyed them, you know, doing Paris, you know, the way they did it for her. It's her birthday. It's her birthday weekend.
And she had been there for like a week already, I think.
Yeah, and she didn't know he was coming. Because it was a whole video when he showed up. Yeah. She didn't know he was coming, so that was nice. He surprised her. And, you know, they just been moving around and they, you know, they in love and they seem very happy. And, you know, life is good, man. So, you know, God bless him, man. Steve be on his bullshit sometimes, but in this case, God bless him. I ain't got no
issue. Listen, I'm not mad at
nothing. He's your old uncle. We know this nigga.
Yeah, I'm not mad at nothing about Steve and Marjorie, except maybe the way Steve dissed his ex-wife to get with Marjorie. But I'm not mad at nothing about Steve and Marjorie's relationship. It clearly works for them. And they're cute to watch when they're together. And she upped Steve's swag increased many folds once he married Martin.
Made him take that toupee off.
Yep.
Was major. The toupee was major.
Steve ain't have all that. Steve ain't have, I mean, he was always kind of like,
he was country fly.
Yeah, could also see that. You could see the cockiness in him, but he ain't had this level of, you know, attitude and whatever pre-Marjorie. So, shouts to her for that.
Yeah, God bless them, man. They seem to be a happy couple, and everybody seems to be good.
A black woman in your life.
There you go. There you go. Get a black woman in your life. Get you together. Nye, did you want to talk about this, just real briefly, about the IG outage, last week?
Sure. Well, it was Facebook and IG went down for the better part of a business day.
And WhatsApp.
WhatsApp, all the Facebook-owned social media companies, which first somebody mentioned was just a sign of why there should be no conglomerate on all the services like that. Because WhatsApp, especially, what I think a lot of people in the States don't realize is that in the countries where data is limited, and you can't necessarily afford to be using, 3 gigs, 4 gigs, however many gigs a day on like Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that, or even on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
WhatsApp is the biggest social media service in a lot of countries, like in almost the entire continent of Africa, is WhatsApp all day. Absolutely. And because of the fact that you can communicate back and forth with anybody internationally seamlessly. Like if you don't even have, I didn't hear about WhatsApp until I was about to go, I think, to Israel, and somebody was like, I was going to Europe once, and somebody was like, do you have WhatsApp? Because if you're over there, you don't have to get your phone data. You can just have Wi-Fi and talk to everybody. So that being down was fucked up for a lot of people. But globally, all three services were down, and it was more than just like they weren't working. The DNS, which was the actual, I'm a layperson, but the best way I can explain it as how I understand it is, it's literally the place where your website info is housed in the World Wide Web, right? So it's like your address. Your entire, like if your house just, if any mention of your house from Google Maps, whatever, just fucking disappeared. If any reference to your house from any, mail service, any GPS system, anything just disappeared, that's kind of like what this is. So domain servers were advertising like the Facebook domain and stuff for sale. Not that they ever would have been able to keep it had anybody been able to afford to buy it, because I'm sure the valuation was stupid. But what Facebook originally officially said, somebody who works in Facebook's tech troubleshooting department said on Reddit that what happened was there's the equivalent of what would be a router for us in our house, in our individual houses, was down. And when it powered back, because of the power brownouts in China, which is a whole other thing, when it powered back up, there was an error and it didn't recognize the DNS servers. Now, that person who said that on Reddit, their comment was yanked almost immediately. Their account was gone within an hour. That means it's true. And I'm not surprised, because I'm like, if you work on the back end of Facebook, why in the world would you think that you could actually say that shit publicly, even anonymously? Like, it was way too much detail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, Facebook stock was already dropping. Like, by the time they said that, Zuckerberg was down $7 billion.
Yeah.
So that shit got yanked immediately. And, they finally got it back up. And, but some people are also saying that they believe it was a self-sabotage, because the report or the legal filings from...
The whistleblower interview had come out the day before.
Yeah. But there was something else that was coming out the next day, too. The whistleblower interview had come out, but there were some documents that dropped the following day that I think were like the sanctions against Facebook or something like that. Mm. So, but, and that didn't make sense to me only because it was a complete wipeout. They wouldn't even have had access to their servers to delete anything, right? That was my thing. Like, it wasn't that they took the servers offline, it's that the servers disappeared. Like, Mark apparently sent somebody physically to go basically, like, reboot the shit. Like, it's like unplug and plug it back in type shit. So anyway, what was interesting, though, is that the whole day, Twitter had jokes because everybody was coming to Twitter.
Yeah, because Twitter was the only thing popping.
Twitter was the only thing popping. So, you know, folks was like, here come these motherfuckers who ain't been on Twitter.
There was a thing that said how much percentage the user thing went. I can't what it was. It was something crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, it went up like thousands of percent that day. Like, everybody flooded Twitter, you know?
Yeah, because the first thing that happened,
people we hadn't seen tweet in years.
In years. were tweeting. Because the first thing that happens when IG goes down, people come to Twitter just to see if IG is really down. Like, that's the first thing that happens. Yeah. Like, you come to Twitter to see if people are tweeting that IG is down. But when it was down, like, all day, niggas really came back. So it was funny because folks was like, Can y'all who ain't been here some years, please turn off those auto astrology tweets that y'all have every morning. And folks were posting memes like, here comes the aunties who don't never be here. And then one day, the day after, some woman posted something. It had something to do with child support or something. And somebody was like, okay, Facebook's back up.
You can go back over there.
Like, y'all, we good over here with that. So it was interesting to watch people really like freak out. And I think, but it was also, even from my own human behavior, I realized throughout the day how often I automatically, like, if I click out of Twitter, if I'm on my phone and I close out of Twitter to go do something, I automatically hit Instagram. I don't think about it.
You go back and forth between them.
Boom. I just do the rounds, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I closed out Twitter. Let me just hit Instagram real quick to see what's happening. And I kept doing it even though I knew Instagram was down.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, it's so programmed. And that's what I think was really interesting, to just see how programmed we are to check those apps.
Yeah, you know? What you just kind of like, yeah, it's like you just you do it subconsciously now, you know?
Yeah.
I think that outage made an excellent case for net neutrality, under the Trump administration was kind of dissolved, and companies are moving into charging more like they do overseas by the gig, being able to slow your data down, being able to really select which websites you even have access to, which is how it is in a lot of other countries.
Yeah.
So, I mean, local election is coming up. This is the kind of shit that it affects. So,
yeah.
And that was the other thing. At first, it was like, oh shit, like, is this an outside hack, right? And folks was making Squid Game jokes, and I was like, it's too early because we don't know what we're dealing with yet. It's too early for the jokes, because at first, even Twitter was slow, was glitching. But it was because so many people were coming
on there. It was flooding. Yeah.
So at first everybody was like, is Twitter about to go down? My fucking, Fire Stick wasn't working. So I was like, is it the whole internet? Like, what's going on? You know, so it was like, at first it was a little touchy there. Like, is it, like, do we need to be concerned? Is this like, is this the hacker? What's happening? So, you know, we may never know what the real was, but like I said, that Reddit comment and the fact that it got pulled and homeboy got deleted altogether suggests that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Have y'all been following this Bruce Beach story? Have you followed this at all?
Yeah, the beach in L.A.?
In California,
yeah.
So it's a family called the Bruces, and back in the 20s, it bought huge parcels of land on what is now Manhattan Beach.
For like $2,000.
Yeah, and they made a resort because, of course, it was racism, and there were no black resorts for black people to go, you know, with means or whatever, to go. So they built it themselves, and it was doing well, and they started to develop that area more, and the government of the state of California came in and dropped eminent domain shit on them, and took their land, just took it.
Well, after first being harassed by the Klan, and well, go ahead, Sean. That's what you.
But I was going to say, before they even implemented eminent domain, they zoned them out of business.
Right.
They basically harassed people. They would change parking times. They would do things like rezone to where you couldn't change, or you couldn't have, you know, food and beverage in these places. So they basically just attacked them bit by bit and chopped at them until they got to the point where the business was just, it was non-existent. And then they came in with eminent domain to literally just take the land for pennies on the dollar.
Exactly. Right. Literally pennies on the dollar. So the family, I guess off and on, been fighting this for a long time, and Governor Gavin Newsom passed a law giving them the land back. There's a picture of the land, and it's very interesting because, you know, there's a lot of things that come in with this, which is like, you know, how they're going to deal with the taxes of the land now. And there's a kind of like a, I don't know what it's called, but there's a parcel of land that hasn't been houses on it, because that's not on the water. It's like a block from the water. But right. the one on the other piece is two parcels. The second parcel, which is on the water, is developed. So it's kind of like, do they?
Yeah, and they own the two parcels.
Exactly. So it's going to be interesting to see how they deal
with it. Well, and also, well, first of all, I want to say, shout out to Gavin Newsom, because ever since the recall election,
he's been going ham.
This nigga been gone. Every day.
I have to stand.
Gavin is working.
He's not playing. We got free menstrual products and school for
every
kid. I was like, work.
He is California's the first state to outlaw stealthing to actually make it a crime, which is crazy that's just
crazy.
Becoming a crime. He's been, and there's like two more things that he's done. I'm like, oh shit, okay. But what I was going to say was, the thing about this is the precedent it could set when it comes to the racism in urban planning in major cities and the way eminent domain has been used to take land from Black people
for ages.
Because I don't want to go off on a whole tangent, but this is part of what frustrates me when people like poo-poo the whole voting thing, but when I talk a lot about the land and generational wealth, is that they're connected, right?
Because
there was a time when your ability to vote and have a voice was based on whether or not you held land.
Mm-hmm.
So part of taking land away from Black people wasn't just about money. It was about their ability to actually have a say in anything that was going on in the planning of their cities, communities, states, etc., because power came with land and asset ownership, just like with slaves, right?
Also, obviously, like you mentioned earlier, that, you know, land in general, especially like a parcel of land like they have on a beach in California, that's crazy generational wealth. Like, this family would be multimillionaires, even if they were just leasing this land to hotels or people to build on or whatever. Like, who knows the amount of money that family would have?
Well, it is. But what I'm saying is, at the time, for a lot of these, that this land was being taken from Black people, yes, it was about the money, but a lot of it was also about just the disenfranchisement of Black people, period. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you own land, you have a say. And if you don't, like, you don't, right? So it was also like a disempowerment situation. So I say that to say that, you know, California could be setting what for other cities in the country could be a really scary precedent.
Because the
amount of essential illegal eminent domain that we could point to in every city's history is extensive. Yeah. And if even a fraction of this land nationwide had to start to be returned, or now there's a precedent for people to argue for it in court. And you know, this is a unique situation because they have a direct descendancy that can point back and prove, you know, lineage. And that's not always the case.
But
in those cases where it is, California probably just set a precedent that stressed a lot of people out.
Yeah.
Like a lot of white
those
people
two
out.
Parts, those two, the, parts, the two parcels of land that the Bruces just got back are worth $75 million.
Right, that they paid $2,000 for in 1920.
Exactly. So you said this could open up the floodgates to a lot of stuff I'm talking shit because I'm not a lawyer, but I'm assuming not only with Black people, but with more Native people too.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely.
But, you know, so this is going to be very interesting to see where this goes. I just wanted to mention that case. I find it fascinating that they got it back. Like, I can't believe they got it back.
I love when politicians get like a second term or just a second chance at their, you know, like Obama's second term had he gave no fucks about what anybody else had to say. Like, these are the things I said I was going to do. This is what I'm doing. And I love that energy from Gavin Newsom.
Me too. Me too.
Keep it up.
Inka, let's, first of all, did you watch What If? Did you watch the finale? Yep.
Yes.
What'd you think?
Maybe I'm just not that big of a nerd to like care.
Okay, I fucked with it.
It was cool. Like, don't get me wrong, but like,
you wasn't going crazy though.
I wasn't into it.
Okay,
it was alright.
Have you caught up on Wonder Years yet?
Nah, I think I'm gonna binge Wonder Years.
It's only, it's only three.
I'm waiting on Wonder Years and Our Kind of People because right now I'm just getting past. I'm just getting out of like a whole weekly TV schedule. As soon as scenes from a marriage wrapped up yesterday, I gotta watch the finale, and I think Murders in the Building wraps up this week, so I can't do but so many weekly joints at a time. It stresses me out, like having to go back and remember what day I need to go back and check the new episodes and shit is stressing me the fuck out. So I can't, and now I'm on Married at First Sight, which is another weekly situation.
Okay,
so I can only do so many. Yo, they
episodes just, be like an hour and 41 minutes.
I know,
they just throw out 200 minutes of a show.
They've started cutting them down, but they make more episodes. They definitely could do a better job of editing it more tightly, but the people that they've been bringing on the show is I can't watch it. I can't look away. It's a train wreck. But I say that to say that I can't do but so many at this point. I don't know what happened since the pandemic. Appointment TV, I can't do it anymore. Like I've lost the capacity for it. It's crazy.
But it is weird. You're right.
That's why I think I fell off with all the housewives and stuff like that, because I was like, I need shit that I could just watch straight through.
The thing about the Wonder Years is because I don't do weekly. I don't do any network talk. This is the only probably network show that I watch when watching regularly. But the thing about Wonder Years is that the episodes are short. They're 22 minutes, so it's easy to breathe.
Oh, really? I thought it used to be an hour show.
Maybe it did the other one, but this one's 30 minutes. It's
okay, good to know. I need to let a couple more episodes pile up, though. I need to binge.
Bingeable. Like, just real quick, we're recording this podcast, you could have watched
you can literally watch like three episodes in like a shade over an hour.
But I want to I know people love it. I want to get into it and Our Kind of People at the same time. So I think I'm going to give it like another week and jump, because they both start the same week. And I think
I'm out of Our Kind of People already. I watched Wonder Years.
Okay. Yeah, Wendy is dope again.
This is so dope, man.
This is really well done. How they mix the comedy with, you know, they go deep. This was interesting.
Relationship. You know,
spoiler alert. So nah, you might want to mute it or earmuffs or whatever. But I was very interested. Interesting to see Dean's mom, be like very progressive, like. Sexually and like she was turned. I was like, oh, in the 68 you was moving like this?
And then
I love the little blue light parties they have in, you know, and
no, that brought me back, because my mom definitely used to have, you know, like card parties and stuff like that. And she would give us this giant like tray of food and activities, so we would stay upstairs
in the room.
But we were like clutching to the banister, just dying to get one little piece of something.
Yeah,
I remember that was my first taste of Hennessy. I think I was like 10 years old.
Wow. I remember my godfather
at the card party.
I remember sipping my godfather let me sip a little bit of his beer.
Hennessy. At a card party at 10.
Yes,
the blackest shit. The blackest shit I've heard in a very long time.
Yo, and my mom had the silk scarves over the lamp.
Oh.
To change the color of the lamp.
Are you watching
that episode brought me back for sure.
I did watch the pilot episode. I have the other one on Hulu.
There's three now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll catch up, but I'm watching it. I enjoyed it. I didn't, you know, I thought people were overreacting as they tend to do.
But you know how starved we are for good black content. Like, it's especially appointment TV. I don't think we've had something we could all join in on for a while.
I think what's happening is like with the content that we're getting, everything has to be through the lens of a person's particular version of blackness.
Yes.
And when it does not identify with my particular version of blackness, we want to say that it's not black. It's
not real.
That's why you got these white writers in the rooms and all of this other shit. And like, there's just so many different facets of blackness and how you can, you know, see it. Mm-hmm. And what it means. And so I think that's what's kind of happening here is like when people can't, when they don't personally identify with something, they write it off.
Yeah.
As there's no, that didn't really happen. Cause I grew up in, you know, public housing, niggas didn't have middle class lives.
It was a lot of two-parent families in the projects, years ago, and people went to work every day. And all
I saw a tweet that was like, this is unrealistic because black men don't go fishing. And I was like,
what?
Do you know any black men?
What are you talking about? You
never met one that didn't grow up in your city? Are you sure?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, but now I always think about it when I watch, because like I said, the show was based in Montgomery and they went to Tuskegee A&M at that time.
Right.
And they talk about it. And like, that's where all their friends, they all went to college together. Like, that's the thing. Like, they're, you know, there are parents, but like, you look, me like, oh yeah, they were young. They were like 28. Like they were young. You know, they would not fly out of school and they were, you know, still hanging out and dancing and, you know,
and doing nostalgia is off the charts.
It's off the charts. So I know when you and Sean, when you guys catch up, you're gonna really enjoy it. It's a great show. I wanted to mention let's talk real quick about this fight. Did you watch Fight?
Yes, I did. Haven't paid for a fight in a very long time.
I got the link, but you got your money's worth on that one.
I paid full freight. I was not mad.
It was not mad.
That was a great fight. That little $85. The price went up.
Yeah, $85.
Definitely not today's price, my nigga.
Because it used to be $50.
And that was a lot of bread.
Yeah, now $85. It's flipping $100. But they got it was a great fight though. It was 80 bucks.
So, but yeah, I watched it. I watched the undercard. These were all heavyweights, which was a great.
I didn't watch the undercard.
Which was very interesting because, yeah, usually you'll get, you know, the undercards are usually varying weight classes. You don't normally get a full run of heavyweight. So there was like one boring fight. The fight that right before the main event was a little boring, a little dull, not very interesting of a fight. But you know, they're heavyweights, right? So these guys know if they make a mistake, it's night-night.
Over.
You know, you fucking blink and you will, it is
stand up with the lights.
Yeah. So, but it was good though. One dude got disqualified, Polish guy in one of the undercard fights. He kept hitting below the belt. He was just getting his ass whooped.
Okay.
But yeah, then, you know, Tyson, Fury and Deontay Wilder. And I just want to say, for guys that are not really stars, like, they do a lot of star shit. Like, my nigga, like, we don't really give a fuck about your entrance to the ring. Like, I want y'all to stop. I really want to reiterate to them, like, you guys are not stars in that way. You know, if you weren't 6'9 or 6'7, like, people would literally walk past you. You know, you're not Sugar Ray. You're not Mike Tyson. You're not Larry Holmes. Like, you're not a star. And they do, you know, they got all the fucking, the guys rapping, and jumping around and all over the fucking place. And it really just
costumes.
Really just makes me appreciate Mike. Welcome to the Terror Dome. A fucking towel over his neck.
Yep. Well, Ali just walked in.
Ali come out.
Yeah.
With the white robe on.
Yeah, with no antics. Just one walking in. You know, but it was a good fight. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was like five knockdowns all together. Eventually Wilder got KO'd. It was a good fight. A lot of drama. It was good. I enjoyed that shit. I enjoyed that shit a lot. Wanted to mention also.
Hold on now. I do want to say too. like he really he does a lot of trash talking for somebody who's not really a great boxer.
Wilder?
Yes.
A lot.
Like a lot of like an unseemly amount of trash talking for it would be like a nigga averaging like 15 points a game in the league and like talking shit to Mike.
Yeah, the LeBron.
Like you're in the league, but like you're not.
You're not elite, nigga. He got elite power, but he's not an elite fighter at all. He's not an elite fighter.
And he fired his corner from the last fight.
Mark Breland and them, yep.
Yeah, yep. He fired those guys only to come out there and really kind of, not even kind of, he wet the fucking bed.
Absolutely. He didn't do nothing different. He didn't do nothing different. He jabbed a little more, but besides that, he did nothing.
Yeah, he jabbed the first 3 minutes, the first round, and that was it.
And his conditioning was shit, because the nigga was exhausted by round three. The nigga couldn't,
five, he was wiped out.
Wiped out. He could barely stand up. You know, did y'all watch the Chappelle special?
Yeah.
No.
You watch it?
No. Okay. I will. I planned to, although I wasn't going to do it right away. And then I wanted to wait because the conversation was too hot that I knew I wasn't going to go into it objectively. I was just going to be waiting for one part just a week, but also like I wasn't in a hurry to watch it, and I think we talked about this with the last special. Like even with the last special, it was fine. And you know, when I say fine, I mean obviously the LGBTQ part he did in that special, I totally saw like where it was offensive and how, but I didn't find it terribly funny. I don't find like Dave as funny one. I don't find Dave as funny as I used to, and I think that Dave has been in Ohio with a lot of money and a lot of deference around the same motherfucking people for too goddamn long. He's lost a bit of insight, and this goes beyond his hyper focus on trans people. I think that Dave has lost some of the insight and the ability to see beyond himself that made him funny to me in the first place. People keep talking about he's edgy. I feel like he actually lost the edge, and Dave's too smart to even be on the same topic for the third special in a row. Like there's no reason for that. So yeah. I'm also just not in a hurry to watch anything Dave does anymore. Okay. Like I used to be. Yeah.
I'll get to it when I get to it. What'd you think about Inca?
It felt a little lazy to me. And I don't mean, let me just say what I mean by that. Just that we're used to seeing Dave or even comedians of that caliber. If they have an hour special, you take about a year to work on that in front of crowds. He makes these intricate kind of jokes. You know, I think the first joke that comes to mind is the one where he says, you know, he introduces the punchline up front in one of those other specials where it's like, and I kicked her in the pussy, and like how he went around the world and brought it back. And I thought that was a really smart joke, misogynistic as it was, whatever. But I didn't see any of that sort of, let me tinker out this joke and let me make it really smart. And, you know, there was no aha moment to any of these jokes. So I didn't really laugh.
That used to be the thing, right? He would say something that came off as offensive at the top. Like, there was a joke even about dating minors. But by the time he got to the end of it, like Inca said, what you realized is it was set up to make you realize how absurd the point of view was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when Keeping It Real goes wrong, even when you look at the skits, like, he would put forth something that looked at first like a defense of that thought. And by the time he got to the end of it, you realize that he was actually making fun of people who are stuck in like a certain kind of mindset. That's where Dave was brilliant. And the offense would be to like, you would be offended maybe to realize like, oh shit, I've had this limited mindset. How dare he challenge me on it? And now it feels like he's being offensive for offense's sake. Right. And I know people keep saying it's deeper than that. It doesn't feel deeper than that.
What'd you think, bro?
I wasn't terribly, I didn't think what he did was terribly offensive, but I also didn't think it was funny. and I watched stand-up routines to laugh. And, you know, I chuckled maybe once or twice. but I don't, you know, like, I don't fucking want to be lectured, my nigga. Like, I'm not, like, I don't enjoy sitting through, you know, almost like a venting session of sorts. It's not really my bag. Mm-hmm. And I get that for some people it is. And I get what Dave has become. Dave has become a lightning rod. And I think he feeds off that in a way that he didn't used to before. And I do think that it is about being around this sort of very safe environment that he, this cocoon almost that he might have cultivated with the people and not really being challenged, right? Like, that's the thing about views. Like, a view doesn't really mean shit if you're only spewing it to people who have that same view, right? If you're only getting
exactly. If everybody's just like, word.
If there's no one challenging you, and again, like, we've seen this happen in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
Where there'll be that one nigga that will challenge the room, and that conversation shifts.
Or the barbershop.
Or in the barbershop. There'll be that one dude that'll be like, nah, that ain't really, that y'all bugging the fuck out.
Y'all sound crazy right now. You know,
and so I don't think he really has that. And I think, you know, people are looking at this as some sort of, this is smart and edgy and he's a comedic genius. And look, Dave is very good at his job, right? Like, I don't think you do stand up for 25 years and not know how to actually do an hour worth of material. I think you can kind of figure that out. But I also just think that it's a little dull. It's a little boring. It's not very funny. It's not incredibly interesting. But I also think he just feeds in this weird way that this shit is giving him a level of life that is weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way he locks into it does not seem, you know, healthy is probably a terrible word to use, but it doesn't seem genuine, right? Like, yeah, it seems like this, you know.
And the thing is, Dave was not, I'm sorry, Jeff, the thing is that, to your point, Sean, Dave was not that kind of dude. That's what amazed me at first, is like, when he came back from comedy, because he's only been back a few years, really. But when he came back, he was like this angry, chain smoking. All of a sudden, a nigga was brolic. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was almost pacing the stage. He didn't do it in this special, but like, I saw Dave live, like in 17, maybe. And, yeah, he was chain smoking. He's pacing the stage. Nigga looked stressed out. And it's like, there used to be a levity and a kind of silliness to Dave's comedy, which I think was part of it, right? Like, it was slightly physical. He still does it a little bit. There's voices and all that other shit, but
he don't do it like he used to, though.
He doesn't do it like he used to, and his time away actually seemed to have made him angry. And I won't say that some anger, as any black entertainer, once you have a platform, isn't allowed. I mean, a nigga came up under Paul Mooney, one of the angriest black comics that we had in history, but like, it was angry to a purpose, right? And that's the thing, is like, there doesn't seem to be a purpose to it, other than, like Sean said, sitting up on stage and fucking lecturing to us about how mad you are about what people think about what you said publicly. Like, you perform to people for a living, my nigga. Like, you gonna get some feedback. It's what you do.
And this isn't the, like, he, you know, the Netflix situation reminded me about what I don't particularly like about Dave. You know, when he did the joke about Netflix and basically calling Netflix and saying, hey, this doesn't make me feel good, like, it really registered to me that he's very fucking clear on his power.
Yes.
He's absolutely clear on what that power means and how he can wield it to impact the shit that he wants to impact for his personal gain. And I have no problem with that, my nigga. But like, don't stand up here like you're some fucking martyr, okay? No one's canceling you because That's just whatever. Like, people just say that shit to say that shit. Like, no one's...
And nobody was canceling you until you started talking about people canceling you. It wasn't even a conversation.
That's what it feels like. It feels like the nigga who's in the club talking about how everybody's jealous of him.
Yeah, right.
Like, my nigga, exactly. Nobody's paying attention to you and that 190E you got parked out front.
Word.
I promise you, my nigga.
And that Cuban link.
you got on some Jordan.
Hold on now.
Oh, my God.
Cuban link.
No. What I'm saying is, like, what I find is very interesting. Like, there's three people now that are just off the top of my dome. I'm sure there's more. It's Kanye, it's Trump, and it's Dave. And what I mean by that is, like Sean said, they understand that this power that because of social media has, and they wield it, and they shoot it at whoever they want to shoot it at, and it's kind of like they shoot it and then play victim at the same time. Like, it's like, you know.
All right.
You know, and that's what Dave is doing more and more. Even in this special, he was like, at the end, he was like, I'm telling you, LGBT community, I'm not talking about this anymore. It's like, nigga, nobody's asked you to talk about this.
But also, you like, talked about it for three specials. So that's what I'm saying. You don't talk about it anymore.
And I also just want to say, too, and, you know, maybe I'm wrong in how it came across to me. But I thought it was just incredibly wild that this person who he called his friend, who committed suicide, right? Like, I thought it was very wild that he would kind of put himself at the center of why that person would have done that, right? Yeah. Like, or his actions was something that contributed to that person doing that, not really considering that there's an entire life that is being led outside of this sphere of my interactions with you. Like, that interaction with that person could have been very important. Like, we don't know that, right?
Yeah, but
we also don't know if that shit was just a drop in the bucket to the grand scheme of life,
to the daily life,
fucking haymakers at you, right? Mm-hmm. Like the idea that you would just center yourself in this person's, you know, I guess I could say, like, this sort of worst situation, right? Like,
yeah.
I just thought it was very, and maybe not narcissistic, but I thought it was very ego driven. And I think what we're seeing now is that he almost is like he might need another break, because he might be at the point where he was when he got offered the $50 million and realized that, hey man, maybe I'm going a little bit too left here. I need to center myself. And because this doesn't feel like the rejuvenated Dave that came out a few years ago. This feels like a dude that is just like, he's looking for shit that people are mad. He's searching for the most, you know, simple shit to make it an arrow to put in his back.
He doesn't seem to be having fun with it. I'm not going to say Dave doesn't enjoy it, because he still does this too much to not enjoy it. Like, Dave still does stand up too much. He was doing it through the whole pandemic. He still, you know, he was busing people out to Ohio and shit like that. But I won't say he doesn't enjoy the art, but I always find it easy. You can usually pinpoint an arc in an entertainer's career at which you feel like the job is wearing on them. And I feel like, you know, even if you are a comedian who wants to address things on stage, and I know comedians are some of the most fucked up people emotionally, you know, in entertainment, like, these niggas be miserable and mean and grumpy in real life often. And Dave is among those, I think. Like, he's very strange if you've ever been around him in person on stage. It's like, whatever. But it's like, I still think that when you seem to be looking for things to be angry about instead of taking that still, like, absurdist, like, Dave was an absurdist comic. That's what he was. And he's not that. His style has changed. And I don't know, you know, people are always like, Dave was always edgy. And I'm like, no, his style has changed. Y'all don't see that, but his style has
completely he's becoming the character that he was in the fucking Clumps.
Right.
like the mean comic who like
he's like Triumph the Insult Dog. He's Triumph the Insult Dog. Y'all remember what night show was that that had that fucking dog?
I don't know, but he used to always be on what's called. He used to be on the MTV Awards all the time too. But you know, it was just certain things that he said. Like I said, the one thing about, you know, I'm not saying this no more. And I was listening to Van Lathan and Rachel's podcast, and Rachel said some real interesting shit. She said that it's almost like Dave kind of feels guilty that he was kind of, like I said, I don't know if what he did or said pushed the trans woman over the edge to kill herself, but Dave kind of feels guilty that he might have had a part in that, and so he was. It was almost
trying
like
to absolve himself.
He was trying to absolve himself. Kind of like, well, my friend would have laughed at these jokes. Like, she's my friend, and she would have laughed at these jokes. So fuck y'all. And it's kind of like, well, maybe she would have, maybe she would. It just like I said, it felt like he was working it out as he was saying.
Also,
like,
and I don't mean to cut you off, but like that's also kind of like a part of the problem for me. It's like, yeah, your friend might have laughed at these jokes. Probably would have laughed at these jokes.
But a whole lot of other trans people would not.
A whole lot of other people are saying this isn't funny to me. Like, there's a bunch of black people that laugh at fucking black jokes. That don't mean that all that shit is funny.
That's real.
You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we know, you know, you can feel that shit, man. When someone's not, you know, when there's a venom behind a joke and there's a vitriol behind a joke. And listen, man, like the reality is that, yes, this is a, you know, shit is dangerous.
Right.
Yeah. Shit is dangerous. Like,
and he talked about how the trans woman was like she was at one of Dave's shows, I guess, and that a comedian was kind of going at her from the stage. And she said, no, Dave was, I'm tripping. Dave was saying shit. And she said something like, yo, like I'm a fucking human being.
Yeah.
And Dave was like, oh shit, like, yeah, like I'm kind of tripping. Like I'm kind of forgetting that this is a human being who's dealt with a lot of shit in their life to even get to this space or whatever.
Right. My thing is, to Sean's point, like even if I watched it, because here's what I'm seeing, and this is what I don't understand about black people specifically, right? We spend all day on the internet telling white people that they can't make a decision as to what is and isn't offensive. And then we will watch this special and be like, well, I didn't think it was offensive. And it's like, well, nigga, you ain't trans, right? So that's my thing. If trans people are saying this is harmful and offensive, I am obligated to listen to the trans people.
I'm not living that life.
That's not my life. It's not for me to say, especially when I be one of the main motherfuckers out here telling white people you're wilding out right now, right? So it's like, it's not for me to decide whether Dave is with or within bounds. If trans people are saying he's out of bounds, I do know that whether jokingly or not, one thing I heard from a clip was him calling himself a TERF. Whether you're joking or not, that is fucking dangerous. There is no joking about some shit like that, because it literally means that you are a feminist who doesn't believe that trans women are women. So, like, whether you're joking or not, that's not a joke. That's not something that you play with, right? So it's
so much more harmful when you have a sphere of influence.
Exactly. And there's also this, and, you know, people are like, well, he's talking about, you know, white trans activists. And I'm like, you cannot talk about trans people and it not impact black trans people. They are dying at like ridiculously scary rates. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, you got somebody like Dave, like advancing this kind of, well, nah, they shouldn't, they're not real women or, you know, whatever dialogue. There's no way to do that lightly, right?
But niggas always do that, splitting it up like, yo, I'm not fucking with that gay shit. Okay, yeah, but what about Cousin Pookie?
You fucking exactly. With that? Oh, that's different. Cousin? No, it's not.
It's not different, my nigga.
Yeah, black people try to talk about LGBTQ issues and act like it's just a white thing.
Intersectionality doesn't
Yeah, exist. The lowest, the most vulnerable is always going to be the most impacted, and the most vulnerable is always going to be black folks, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. The second thing is that this idea that comedy is not supposed to evolve and all these comedians clutching their pearls over motherfucking cancel culture. It's not cancel, it's accountability. Comedy always evolves. Like, age jokes used to be on the table, my nigga. We used to call people test tube babies, fucking African booty. Like, all that shit used to be, like, the assault and violence were on the table. Domestic abuse was on the table. Like, comedy evolves because society evolves and social norms evolves and conversations evolve. So if comedy is meant to reflect the actual world and society at large, of course your comedy is going to evolve. Like somebody said, they didn't believe when Eddie Murphy said that when he goes back and watches some of his old jokes, he doesn't really believe he's offended. I was like, I hope he is, because I went back and watched Raw and I was like, this, some of this shit is horrific. Some of it is still really funny.
I believe that.
I believe he's embarrassed.
I think he's full of shit. But then he's
some of that shit is,
but still.
Yeah, some of that shit is awful. It's awful. It's not the whole, like, you, I'm not saying we throwing out the whole old Eddie.
No, but there's
some
shit.
Of that shit is, yeah. Like, I cringed that I used to be able to, there's shit I watched that I used to find really funny, and now I cringe. Like, yo, yeah. I can't believe I was laughing at that shit, right? Yeah. Because you get older, you see life, you see situations, you learn more, you do better. So yeah. Comedy should evolve. There's nothing wrong with that. That is the evolution of culture. That is the evolution of language. That is the evolution of norms. That's normal. So I also just take offense with people who are like, I think it's so small-minded to be like, people shouldn't have to change what the fuck they say. Or public, you know, now people aren't going to say everything they think. People shouldn't say everything they fucking think. That's the problem with social media. Or you can say it, but you can't say it and not expect.
Expect the backlash. Expect the consequences.
You literally, and that's my little rant, is for people who think that, people who think that entertainers who literally have made a career out of getting people to fuck with what they say and do not have to be subject to people not fucking with what they say and do. This is what you chose to do for a living. You chose to do shit in public to encourage people to give you money to do the shit that you do in public. So that means that when people aren't fucking with you and what you do in public, you got to take that too. Both of it.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want and not get and miss that one or two checks. You got to do that.
Yeah, you can't pick and choose, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, so I didn't enjoy this special. I won't watch it again. I mean, I watched it just, you know, just for us taping and to say I watched it, but I'm not like, yo, that shit was funny, put that on. I'm good on it, you know? I wanted to end with this Texas high school shooting, because it's getting murky. So this Timberview High School, which is in Arlington, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas, it's actually where the Cowboys used to play. There was a shooting. The kid's name is Timothy Simpkins. He's 18 years old. There was footage of him fighting in class. Apparently him and a couple of the kids have been fighting this whole school year. There have been accusations of those kids bullying him. The community, from what his mom said, I saw the interview with his mom and family in front. It's one of those, you know, it's kind of like a upper middle class black community, mostly black, but there's some white folks there too, outside of Dallas. And, you know, there's these communities all over the country, you know, outside of Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, Charlotte, North Carolina, where black folks have, you know, done well and they got nice homes and stuff like that. And she said that the kids in the school were jealous of him because he had nice stuff. And so they would kind of bully him, and they were attributing it to, like, the other kids were in gangs and they were bullying him. Since then, so he shot one of the kids who's fighting, and from what I could kind of read, you know, as a kid, he pulls out this .45 caliber handgun, which is a powerful gun. Fortunately, he didn't really hit any the other people directly, because one of the people he shot was a teacher. Like, he was kind of shot random, like that. You know, he wasn't like a marksman. And it seems like the people he shot are going to be okay. Two people I think are still in the hospital. One's still fairly critical, but looks like they're coming around. Other ones are grazed and so on. Now it's coming out from the other side. They're saying that Timothy was like a drug dealer and he was the bully. So there's all these conflicting stories of what was, you know, really happening here. But it's just sad because you've got these teenagers, these high school kids and young teachers as well that are going to have their lives impacted. Timothy's definitely going to go to jail. He's definitely going to do some time. This is right. In Texas. There's no way he's not going to do some time. They say they have the bullying accusations on file. So I don't know if that's how that's going to affect the case and his sentencing. And this thing is just messy, but I wanted to mention because, like I said, it's a sad case, and it's just young kids, you know, and their lives are kind of ruined, you know. Have you all been following this at all?
I haven't until you said it. I didn't even know you and Sean were talking about it. That was the first I'd heard it.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I missed it initially, and then you were talking about it, and I was like, oh damn, that's wild.
So I don't know.
I also want to say. Go ahead, Sean.
Go ahead, bro.
I have kept up with it. I don't know that I fully believe that they didn't know that boy had a gun.
I totally believe they knew he had a gun.
I believe they knew he had, maybe they didn't know he had that gun that day, but I believe that they knew he had access to a gun. Mm-hmm. And there might have been conversations about him using it, because they did not seem at all shocked and surprised.
No.
That any of that took place. And, you know, watching the footage, I mean, you can hear the kid. I mean, the kid is pummeling the shooter. Like, mm-hmm. He's not even attempting, in my opinion, to like physically fight back, which I thought was very weird. And mm-hmm. I thought, to me, that's usually a sign of someone that has made up their mind.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go, like, this is going to happen today.
Yeah.
You know, even the welcome home party vibe.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. They threw a party for him when he bonded out. Like, they had a party for him. They put it on film and everything.
Which is it's just very weird to me. Like, if my kid shot four people, like, I'm not sure that I'm celebrating anything, my nigga. Yeah. Like, even if they were able to get him out on bond, like, you know, Buddy's looking at real time. He hurt real people. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they weren't, he hurt people that were not intended for his target. He's traumatized kids that were just in neighboring classrooms because they don't know what the hell is going on, right? Like, you sitting in a classroom, there was somebody that showed footage of their kid having, mm-hmm. you know, in the classroom, and you can hear the shots ringing out.
I saw that.
I don't know either way, and I'm sure a ton of things will come out because, like most teenagers, everything is in their phone. Yeah, all the text messages, I'm sure, will be subpoenaed, and we'll kind of see what happens. But my guess is he probably was being bullied, and I wouldn't say that they encouraged him to do this, but I would say it did not feel like
they was discouraged. Exactly. It was kind of like, well, you know, enough is enough, you know, kind of thing.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever happens, happens. So it's gonna tear up the community. It's gonna tear up those families. I want to just kind of keep an eye on and see what's going on.
If you're afraid that he just basically shot a gang member, I'm not so sure that I'm going to be just out celebrating.
You're having a party.
Like, it's just like, wouldn't your first concern would be, we got to move, or
we got to lay low at least,
like
safety at the very
least. Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's a lot of strange accusations flying back and forth. I got to say this one last thing. I meant to say it early. I do this every year too. So I want to say thank you to everybody texting me, DM me, whatever, wishing me a happy birthday. I really appreciate that.
It is nice.
But it seems to be getting harder. And this is men. This is not women. It seems to be getting harder and harder every year for black men to just say happy birthday. Happy OG Day, Happy G Day, Happy Born Day, Blessed Born Earth Day, Happy, nigga, just say happy birthday.
People are trying to be creative, Jeffrey, because the thing about social media is that you say the same shit every year all the time. People want to be different.
HBD, listen.
I hate HBD, because that's just lazy.
I hate HBD also. You could have kept that.
That's lazy. That's like I told you about four years ago. So now I went and bought a cake and for Thanksgiving, I was going to Penny's house and I told the guy to put Happy Thanksgiving on the cake. And I opened up the box when I got there and it should say, it said HTG.
Oh my God.
I said, nigga, come on, bro.
Oh you my, know, that's awful.
HTG. I was like,
HTG?
HTG.
I'm Happy airing this whole shit out. You're not going to give me a cake like that. Absolutely not.
So I just, listen, man. I saw a guy. Message took his page down, but he was funny on Instagram, and he had a skit about this because he was like, everybody's like, "Happy birthday!" And there was this one guy in the corner. He's like, "Yo, happy birthday, happy born day!" And he's like, "Yo, bro, just say it." I'm just like, yeah, you saw that, right, bro? Yeah. Just say happy birthday. I understand you want to be creative, but listen, I'm not a 5%er. I'm not a member of the nations of the Earth and gods. I respect them, but I'm not in that. I'm not Muslim. I'm none of that. So just happy birthday's fine. The whole
happy OG, solar but, return.
Yeah, happy day around our sun. Like, nigga, what? Just say goddamn happy birthday. Keep it pushing, man.
My God. Oh, I love it.
Every day it gets worse. It's like, oh my God, Jesus Christ.
So anyway, I just got one shout out.
Go ahead.
Shout out is to a girl named Elise on TikTok who did the taco story.
Oh,
the whole TikTok account.
Oh my God, that taco like that. Story.
Her comedic timing is unlike anything I've
Incredible.
Seen in a while. She is so damn funny.
She either needs to be doing stand up or doing some comedy writing because she's
for sure.
Incredible.
She's like a singer though.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, so she a lot of her account before the taco story was just her stacking vocals. Like she'll start out, you know, on the screen, it'll be like bass and then tenor and then alto and then mezzo soprano and then soprano, like, and then she, you know, of popular songs, like how to stack those vocals. And then ever so often she would tell a story, but the taco story caught on. And that is one of the most horrifying first date stories I've ever heard.
Oh my
but the
God.
Way she tells it is so funny and so engaging. So
yeah,
go follow. I can't think of her handle, but Elise on TikTok.
Yeah,
she got like 500,000 followers in the last week or so. But
yeah, because that story was crazy. That story was loony. She's like, I'm already in. I'm going to.
We went through the drive-thru, ordered 100 tacos,
and then your man said. He ain't got his wallet.
Crazy. Right. He didn't have his wallet.
Yeah.
She didn't even talk. So
that's word. So that's it. We're going to wrap it up. Happy born day.
You know what?
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Switch. Happy Libra season. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye. Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.